Just so you guys know, at 8 a.m., which is an hour and a half from now, roughly, all of the blinds in the building activate. It's pretty amazing. The best part was, like, we didn't expect it the first time we were here at 8 a.m. So a couple of us were in, like, at 7. We're a little bit delirious, and, like, we hit 8 a.m. And so we're in a skyrise, right? We're on the 29th floor of this building. And suddenly, there's a bright flash from the windows. And a sound, like a rumbling, like a ka-chunk, and then... And so, for a moment, right. We thought, like, holy, we've been nuked. 29th floor, sorry. Yeah, and you're in Japan. That's the natural conclusion. It really got the heart pumping. I'm Phil DeLuca.
I am Sean Watson.
And I'm Nate Burgess.
And we are Commanderin. Thanks for listening, everybody. We focus on topics the community wants to hear about and talk to interesting people along the way, but never, ever talk about three banned topics: religion, politics, and Hearthstone. You can find us on iTunes, on Facebook, on Twitter, on YouTube, on Reddit, and mtgcast.com by searching for Commander and MTG Podcast. We have a great show lined up for our listeners this week, don't we, gentlemen? We're going to be talking up.
Well, I refuse to comment on how good it will be before we've recorded it, Philip. And
well, we have it lined up.
That's true. We do have it lined up in a straight line and everything.
We're going to be talking about some of the legendary creature commanders from the Commander 2015 set. It's going to be exciting. But first, we have some news. Once again, I am still in Japan, and so the audio quality might be a little bit lower than what we're used to. I'm in a conference room that is made to look like a living room. So I have no idea what this sounds like. I guess we'll hear it shortly. In other news, we have some leaked cards, perhaps. Just recently, somebody on Twitter, and these are all unconfirmed, leaked three very interesting cards from the Oath of the Gatewatch set. What do we call that again?
Guardians of the Gate to Sea.
Yeah.
Because it's the
Guardians of the Gate to Sea.
It's the Sea Gate that is the gate they're referencing in the name.
Yeah. But am I the only one just noticing that the set symbol for Guardians of the Gate to Sea is actually the Kozilek faceplates, the floating faceplates? Yeah, look at it.
No, they're diamond shards.
Disagree with you both. They are a pictographic symbol of the sea gate, of the name gate.
The guaranteed
sea gate.
Look at the artisan of Kozilek, and you can see.
I'm looking at the artisan of Kozilek. He's been to Disneyland. He's got his Mickey Mouse hat on. It's got a little beaten up on the car ride home. It's flattened out the edges. He just loves Disney.
Yes, that is true. He does love Disney. And his little head shape there with the floating hedron-like elements is definitely reminiscent of the Oath of the Guardians of the Gate to Sea.
So these spoilers, are we presuming we're going to take them with a huge, ginormous fist full of salt?
Oh, yes. So the spoilers what we're talking about, you can probably still see them up on mythicspoiler.com, but they spoiled two lands and a legendary creature. And the first land it's a full art land, or it's a picture of a full art land. It's called Wastes, and it's a basic land type that produces diamond mana.
Yeah, so we can't really say, so is this going to be the symbol for colorless mana? And we now have to refer to what we used to call colorless mana as mana of any color.
Well, no, because of the casting cost of the creature. It's got a number, and then it's got shards.
Yeah, right. So you'd say 8 of any color plus 2 colorless mana. Yeah, it's 8 of any color.
Of any color.
And then two, talking about the Kozilek, we'll talk about his abilities in a second, just his casting cost. So you would have to say he is 8 of any colour or any mana, and 2, specifically colourless mana.
Right.
Oh, that's actually
the simplest way to address this, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's still a mouthful. So for years, people have, fanboyed, spitballed. What would they do, guys, if they made a sick colour in magic? What colour would it be? Would we have yellow spells? Perhaps we'd have purple magic. What would it do? Is this what they're trying to do?
I think so. I mean, if this is correct, right, then this is a very logical way to approach adding a basic land that adds colorless mana, right? Adding a basic land and it adds colorless mana. That's pretty sweet. That's a good interpretation, Sean.
So a rules question which would come up into my head in relating to Commander, and this would be one for the rules committee, I guess, but I'd be interested to know what community's opinion on it is. So if I took, let's say, Ulamog the Ceaseless Hunger as my general in a EDH deck, can I put Wastes in as the mana source, even though Ulamog does not have diamond mana in his casting cost, but he does have colorless mana as his casting cost?
Yeah, that makes sense. Well,
yeah, the way you've interpreted it, yes, you can definitely use diamond mana with Ulamog, the way you've interpreted it, assuming that there's any diamond mana at all.
Yeah, this is all based on the presumption that these are real as opposed to very good fakes.
Right. So let's hit these three cards and then talk about why we think these might be fakes. And so the next card, Nate, I kind of think you as our resident Eldrazi Titan dude need to read this card.
Kozilek, the Great Distortion. 8 diamond. Legendary creature Eldrazi, 12/12. When you cast Kozilek, the Great Distortion, if you have fewer than 7 cards in hand, draw cards equal to the difference. Menace. You need at least 2 creatures to block Kozilek, the Great Distortion. And discard a card with converted mana cost X. Counter target spell with converted mana cost X. Avoid as cryptic as reality itself.
Yeah, that important note on that last ability. That's not target spell with converted mana cost X or less. That's just counter target spell with converted mana cost X.
It's so very if they specific.
Cast a, if they cast a spell which is CMC 3 and you only have a card which has a CMC of 5 in your hand, you cannot counter their spell which has CMC 3, as that is written.
That is correct.
Right. Which is odd and very not very good. His first ability is excellent.
It does prevent a lot of reanimator shenanigans, right? Where if this guy's out, then you could, in theory, use an Ulamog to counter pretty much any spell in the game and then reanimate the Ulamog.
No.
If it were X or less, you could do
that.
And so the
That's what I'm saying.
So the specific use of X there is really kind of a limiter on it. But of course, you've just filled your hand with cards, so.
It's true.
I think it's feasible as a card.
Yeah.
I think it might be a real card. I think the kerning on the title text next to the mana symbols is maybe slightly off, maybe not. I don't know.
I like his name because Kozilek the Great Distortion. I mean, Nate, you're a guitarist. You'll know that my Super Fuzz Big Muff pedal that produces great distortion.
Wow! Yeah,
that was Nate switching. The impression of a Super Fuzz Big Muff switch pedal.
And Nate, you'll hear this in the record. It was broken up.
Yeah, I can see it on the waveform.
But it sounded even better.
Yeah, that was awesome.
You are ironically distorted.
Right. So yeah. kind of a neat card. We'll get to again why this might be a fake in just a bit. And then the
I had one about why wastes might be fake. So we've already discussed wastes. So just why I think wastes might be fake very quickly is an artwork thing. So you guys have read some of the stories and stuff. What happens once an Eldrazi has drained the land of all of its colored magic?
Right. It's supposed to crumble, but we don't actually know the effect of Kozilek on the environment.
Does he turn things to diamonds?
He's distorting them. Kozilek's great.
Okay, so the last card.
Yeah, and so this last card is interesting. There's a little mouse pointer in it. I don't know if you saw that. It's called Mirrorpool. Yeah. It's a land, and it looks like it's a mythic rare land. Mirrorpool enters the battlefield tapped. Tap to add diamond to your mana pool. Two and a diamond tap, sacrifice Mirrorpool. Copy target instant or sorcery spell you control. You may choose new targets for the copy. Four and a diamond tap, sacrifice Mirrorpool. Put a token onto the battlefield that's a copy of target creature you control. And I think we should be calling this Riku Pool if it's in fact a card.
So if you can't spend mana from a colored mana source to create diamond mana, that card's not that amazing. If you can spend any mana to create diamond mana, or anything from a colorless sort of land source to create diamond mana, that card's great.
Yeah, but again, it's pretty limiting. I mean, it's fairly easy to recur land. So I don't think those abilities are too out of whack. And if you can only spend diamond mana on diamond mana, then it's still not bad. But it is very parasitic.
So far, what we've seen with the Kozilek stuff from Battle for Zendikar was he was the red-blue kind of vibe. A lot of his spells were the red-bluey ones. I know there weren't a lot of them, but the ones that were there were all red or red-blue. And that first ability, not the producer mana ability, but the first activated ability is a very red ability, and the second ability is a very blue ability. Clone and copy instant or sorcery.
Yeah, it's good. I think you're right. It definitely speaks to Kozilek's potentially being blue and red based, or at least affinity for blue and red.
Because Ulamog was black and green? Like a lot of his better spells were black or green, I felt.
Black and red?
Yeah, it was certainly black. Maybe Ulamog's the blue guy and Emrakul isn't here.
Yeah.
Strangely absent.
Yep. So why we think it's a fake, we've already kind of talked a little bit about it. In part, you always have to take very early leaks like this with a grain of salt, as Sean was saying, fistfuls of salt. The art on wastes, as Sean mentioned, does not actually match the previously seen Eldrazi corruption.
Yeah, wake, I guess.
Yeah, and then the Kozilek art, the frame has a slight cut in it, kind of 20% of the way down on the right side. And the whole idea that there's now a sixth, quote, color, unquote, in Magic, it's something that's been heralded for a while, and Mark Rosewater has been talking about it. I don't know. It's tough. It's believable, but it's tough to accept until we see it from an official source. And this, by the way, is, if it is true, this is what Mark Rosewater has called, or says that R&D calls, Barry's Land, named after an early Magic designer.
Oh, in other news, Ronda Rousey got kicked in the head and she fell down.
That's sad, but you know, she'll come back. Muhammad Ali lost some fights. You know, he's still arguably the greatest boxer who ever lived.
It's true, it's true. Good luck to you, Ronda. And I think I accidentally saw that video yesterday. I was looking at a new follower on Twitter's media, and she had that clip of Rhonda saying, "No one's going to kick me in the head," and then whack. But Ronda Rousey, of course, we talked about her earlier in one of our earlier episodes, and so we wish her the best of luck recovering from that blow to the head, both physically and career-wise.
She'll be fine. She'll be playing Captain Marvel when Marvel make that film. She'll be Carol Danvers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she would be a good Carol Danvers, wouldn't she?
Damn right she would be. I'm not the first person to say that, though. I can't claim credit for that, but she would be awesome.
Yeah, because it was only later that they started painting Carol Danvers, started drawing Carol Danvers as kind of a sex symbol. But she was also really, always really kind of tough and hard.
Well, her current uniform, she's got the old Captain, when he was a man, the old Captain Marvel costume. So she's not wearing the black, you know, lycra leotard anymore. She's wearing a full costume. She's not just walking TNA. They've given her a bit more respect.
Oh, yeah, look at that.
Did someone just faint? What? What have they done to her?
No, I'm sorry. I put myself on mute so that I could type.
Oh, right.
Yeah, look at that. She's wearing that. She does look a lot like, oh, God, I just lost the woman from
Natalie
Battlestar.
Dormer. Oh, yeah, what's she called?
Ah.
Starbuck is the character, if I can't remember. The actress's name. She looks a bit, I can imagine, Natalie Dormer from Game of Thrones.
Katie Sackhoff.
That's it.
Katie Sackhoff.
She does, in the latest art, at least the one that popped up here, she does seem to look a lot like Katie Sackhoff, doesn't she? I wonder if they're telegraphing that.
That latest art is relatively old, though, if you know what I mean. They've been drawing her that way for a while.
Yeah, but different artists, I mean. And this goes all the way back to the lots of... What a weird costume she had, now that I look at it. That's crazy.
Hey, guys, quick question. How long do you reckon we could go on talking about Captain Marvel's costumes before all our listeners switch off?
All right, that's a good point. So our main topic this week, we took a look at three of the new legendary creatures from the Commander 2015 set and brewed with them. The ones we picked kind of represent the play style we enjoy. Nate has a brutal infect deck. I've got a deck that becomes a very large club. And Sean has a very tricky deck that becomes a very large club too.
Yes, I try and problem solve with this deck with tricky things.
It's important to note that these are not necessarily budget brews. We happen to have been playing a long time in some cases and have amassed a good collection of cards. Plus, some of us go all the way back to the early days and have dual lands that we can use.
Sure.
Original dual lands.
Yeah, by some of us, he means himself, listeners.
Well, yes, but, well.
We'll get him off him, Nate.
Yes, that and the posh lifestyle of a podcaster means that I pretty much have every Magic card that I want.
That reminds me, are you getting me my mint condition mana crypt in Japanese, please?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In fact, I've already picked up three of those, one for each of us.
Oh, thanks, Phil. Yeah, that's beautiful. Hang on. I've seen a photo of that. That's not signed. Put it in the bin.
Well, if you hold on just one second, Sean, I will tear this card. Goodbye, unsigned mana crypt.
Make sure you go right through the middle so it's really unfixable.
Gone.
Bin it, rich boy.
Oh, actually, I forgot that I brought all five decks with me. Just completely forgot about it.
So what we've done, listeners, here is we've each taken our favorite of the new commanders from the C15 set and have expanded the one we like the most. We might do some more of these in the future, but these are our favorites. So feel free to tweet us usual social media stuff for things we may have missed, things that we perhaps could do better, or any questions you have about the choices we've made. We will post up the full deck lists that will be in the show notes.
That's a very good point, Sean. By expanded, do you mean completely reworked using only the commander?
In the case of my Daxos deck, yes, but I'm not talking about him today.
Oh, I see. Yeah, so who did you start with? Let's name our commanders. I started with Mazurek the Crawl Death Priest, the black and green commander. Who did you use, Sean?
I used Garlov of the Ghost Council.
Mm-hmm. And Nate?
I used Izuri Claw of Progress in blue and green.
Mm-hmm. And again, this kind of reflects each of our play styles. So if what I'll do, since yours, I think, has a lot more play in it, both of you, I'll just start with mine. Mine's a work in progress. I've played exactly one game with it, and it was just before recording while you were fixing your mic, Sean.
Yeah.
With Masarek, I went with the obvious sacrifice theme. Every time any player sacrifices a permanent, you put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control. And that gets out of hand pretty quickly. In fact, to the point where Masarek is clearly boosting the team, but he also kind of turns into a Voltron commander, right? So while he's boosting the team, it's every creature you control. So Masarek just keeps getting more and more counters. If you have some way to protect him for a couple of turns, this deck is sacrificing so many things so often that Masarek becomes a real threat unto himself. And then any sort of group trample enabler means that you generally get to come across the line with multiple 8 or 9 power creatures. It's ugly.
Yeah.
And like I said, I've only played one game with it, but Strawberry Fielding kind of demonstrated what Nate ran into, where if I can stay alive long enough to get any sort of decent army up, it gets out of hand. So to play to this, I pulled a lot of the old familiar sacrifice cards, right? Even kind of the original one that you've heard us and, of course, our friends at the Command Zone refer to these as edict effects, right? And that's Diabolic Edict. So for 1 and a black, it's an instant. Target player sacrifices a creature. If you have any of these other edict effects out, like Grave Pact and so forth, then you can even shoot your own creature or force yourself to sacrifice a creature and get multiple counters off of that. And Grave Pact, of course, is wonderful. So whenever one of your creatures dies, the other players have to sacrifice a creature. And remember, each permanent that's sacrificed generates a +1/+1 counter for each of the creatures on your side of the board. So what is Grave Pact but a slower Dictate of Erebos, which is in turn a enchantment version of Butcher of Malakir. All of these are kind of forced edict effects, and they go really well with Gatekeeper of Malakir, which again allows target player to forces target player to sacrifice a creature if it's kicked. Our friends Flashbag Marauder and Merciless Executioner and Slum Reaper all have a role in this deck. And they, of course, are just serving to put one or more counters on each of your creatures. And you think about it, in a 3-player game, a Fleshbag Marauder actually represents each of your creatures getting a permanent +3/+3 bonus. I can't help but giggle. It's just very funny. And then I added some buddies in here that are, you know, really counter enablers. And it's, of course, Doubling Season. I only have one of those, but I'm happily putting it in every one of my green decks that uses tokens or counters. Corpse Jack Menace, a card that we don't hear very often. I considered putting it in the Mimeoplasm at one point, but there aren't enough counters in my version of the Mimeoplasm. But in this deck, it's fantastic. For 2 and a black-green, you get a 4/4 fungus creature that says if 1 or more +1/+1 counters would be placed on a creature you control, twice that many +1/+1 counters are placed on it instead. Hello. That goes very well with the new card, Bloodspore Thrynax, which was a command cast spoiler, I think. And if I got that wrong, we can delete that. Bloodspore Thrynax, that's the new 2 in green-green, devour 1. Each other creature you control enters the battlefield with an additional X +1/+1 counters on it, where X is the number of +1/+1 counters on Bloodspore Thrynax. Fairly new card, Hardened Scales. If 1 or more +1/+1 counters would be placed on a creature you control, that many +1/+1 counters... Sorry, that many +1 counters are placed on it instead.
Yeah, that's a difficult sentence to read.
Yeah, I gave up on it. And that's, of course, an enchantment for 1 green. So like turn 1, you drop one of these, and then you get Masarek out and the good times roll. Vigor. These are in my category of things what add +1/+1 counters to my team. Vigor, of course, is an elemental incarnation, 3 and green-green-green, so a little bit hard to cast, but when you do, ooh boy. It's a 6/6 elemental incarnation with trample, and if damage would be dealt to a creature you control other than Vigor, prevent that damage. Put a +1/+1 counter on that creature for each 1 damage prevented this way. And when it's put into the graveyard from anywhere, shuffle it into your library. That's a lot of fun, guys. Don't sell it short.
Yeah, I've run Vigor in Garve and a couple of other bits and bobs. It's very powerful. The worst it does is creates a lightning rod, so if someone leaves the rest of your team alone, then you're doing fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I put them in Gruul decks, and after I play them, I play Blasphemous Act.
Wow, you are something else, Nate. By the way, Vigor is awfully fun when cast with Flash in response to an Alpha Strike attack by one of your opponents. Yeah, the last of my +1/+1 enabler, dedicated enablers, is Wave of Vitriol. for 5 and green, it's a sorcery. It was released in the last Commander set, 2014. Each player sacrifices all artifacts, enchantments, and non-basic lands he or she controls. And then some other stuff, but that doesn't matter because all that matters is that there's a massive wave of sacrifices being performed, and Masaryk puts a +1/+1 counter on each of your team members for each of those permanents sacrificed. It's wonderful. So that's and then there's some other green and black stuff in there. I didn't go with a lot of tutors. In fact, I only went with one, and that's if you count Sidisi with her exploitability. Yeah. And then, yes, I have a bunch of sacrifice, other things what sacrifice either themselves or other creatures. But they're standard, fairly standard. Hell's Caretakers, fetch lands. Actually, no, I don't have fetch lands, but I have sacrifice lands like Strip Mine, Havenwood Battleground, and some other fun things like that.
I have a couple of questions about seeing it. Are you running Living Death?
I am not running Living Death.
Because it will sacrifice all the creatures in play. Put Masaryk's trigger on the stack. Your creatures will come into play upon the resolution of the Living Death. Then Masaryk's triggers will resolve, giving all your stuff a billion counters.
That's an interesting card. Huh. Yeah, I'll have to take a look at that.
Are you running sacrifice outlets like Ashnod's Altar?
Yeah, Ashnod's Altar, Hell's Caretaker, a couple of other sack... what is it? Perilous Forays.
High Market.
And High Market, of course, and... Viscera Seer.
Okay, two more cards I'm going to ask you before I start just saying, have you got this, have you got this? Because these would be funny ones and I'm not sure you've necessarily considered them. Woodfall Primus and Puppeteer Clique.
Both, yes, both are in here.
Yeah, so listeners, this you can fire off. If you have a sack outlet and both those creatures in play, you can infinitely wipe the table of non-creature permanents and put all creature cards in graveyards into play under your control, then exile them at the end of the turn after they've all attacked. Because you just keep sacking the Primus off to put a step trigger on your Puppeteer Clique that you then sacrifice the Puppeteer Clique to put a trigger on your Primus that you then sacrifice the Primus to put on, etc., etc.
Well, I was just going to recommend Drowna Liberator of Malakir for more counter spew, but if you're recommending that, never mind, man.
Yeah, so that will infinitely put +1/+1 counters on all your creatures, and all the creatures from opponents' graveyards will have X amount of counters on them, X equaling the number of creatures in all graveyards, and you win with those three cards in play. Or any Sacrifice Outlet and Whiffle Primus and Puppeteer Clique.
Yeah, that's pretty sexy.
Cauldron of Souls? While you're thinking big persist things? Yeah.
I realized that Woodfall Primus was a pretty good inclusion in this because the +1/+1 counters, of course, are going to wipe out that -1/-1 from the persist. And then I looked for the other persist to hit the Puppeteer Clique. And that's when I realized, okay, actually, Persist will work really well for all my guys here. And, of course, Cauldron of Souls, which Nate introduced at least me to, had to go in once I realized that. And I'm not sure which version of the deck is up on Deck Stats, but the one with Cauldron of Souls will be up there shortly.
Yeah, this is a powerful deck.
It really is, and I'm looking forward to playing it 3-player. Hint, hint. All right. So I'm sure our listeners have lots of additions to this, and I only named what is it, like 12 cards or 10 cards or something like that, and there's 90 more in the deck. So go take a look at the deck list and give me what critiques you have. I know that a couple of our listeners, Chris Thacker and Johnny Crass, right? I think they've got Masaryk decks. I know Johnny certainly has opinions about the next one we're going to talk about.
Yeah. So the next one is my choice, which is Karlov of the Ghost Council. So I'll quickly read what he does. He's a white and a black for a 2/2 legendary creature spirit advisor. Whenever you gain life, put 2 +1/+1 counters on Karlov of the Ghost Council. For a white and a black, remove 6 +1/+1 counters from Karlov, an exile target creature. So the theme I was going for was twofold. One, to exploit the gaining a life and eventually get through either enough commander damage with Karlov himself or exile enough creatures that I can get through the rest of my army. Or playing quite politically and build up a slow game and sort of grind everyone down with the Orzhov extort mechanic. And then eventually it will get to a point where everyone's on quite low life, I've been keeping my life topped up, and I can sort of subtly take the win that way. So the first of the cards I put into the deck were some cards that are commonly known in modern parlance as the Soul Sisters, which is Soul Warden, Soul's Attendant, and Oriok Champion. These are all cards that two of them are identical. They're 1/1 creatures for 1 white mana, which when you another end creature enters the battlefield, you gain 1 life. And Oriok Champion is 2 white mana for a 1/1. It's exactly the same card, but it has pro black and pro red. So what you can do with these, and I was doing it the other night, turn 1, play a Plains, cast 1 of these guys. Turn 2, play a Swamp, play Karlov, and him entering the battlefield triggers his own ability at that point, because the Soul Warden gives you life once he's entered the battlefield. So he actually enters the battlefield as a 4/4, and then by turn 3, I had an 8/8 commander on the table without paying any more mana.
Crikey.
Yeah. Because my next two opponents both played creature spells. So, okay. You go away. Go ahead and Sakura Tribe Elder or Burnished Heart or Yavimir Elder or any number of sort of small, normally ramp creatures that come down early on in the game. And people tend to not want to sacrifice their ramp. So that wasn't bad. Tricks you can do with the deck. So you're looking at playing. I found myself building more creatures. In my initial build of it, had not that many creatures, and it was sort of pure Voltron, but then I remembered I'm not a giant Voltron kind of guy. So I built a lot more creatures into it. Anything with a good solid stab of lifelink into it. So things that give lifelink to your entire team. The two stars in the deck are Whip of Erebos, which is one of the best black cards printed in recent years. So 2/2 black for a legendary enchantment artifact. Creatures you control have lifelink. Pay 2/2 black to tap it, and you can return a target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield against haste until the end of the turn. Exile it at the beginning of your next end step. And if it would leave the battlefield for any reason, exile it instead. You can only activate it any time you can activate a sorcery. Huh. But the real important bit on that card is the lifelink. Sorin, Solemn Visitor, is a planeswalker as well. His +1 ability is until your next turn, creatures you control get +1/+0 and lifelink. And that's until your next turn. So he keeps it even if you're playing defensively, which is a subtle difference. A lot of planeswalkers that give out abilities like until the end of turn, but he gives it to your whole team for a whole cycle of the table. Tricks you can do with your life. People always ask, what can you do with tons of life? Well, in this case, the commander's doing it for you. He's becoming massive. At worst, you're exiling opponent's creatures. We'll hate it when that Prophet of Krufix comes down. You've always got an answer to that in your commander. You should be gaining enough life that he should be getting into ridiculous stats levels really quickly. Other things you can do with your life. Sanguine Bond, which is a black enchantment for 3/2 black. Whenever you gain life, target opponent loses that much life. And this feeds into another sub-theme of the deck, which is draining effects. So gaining life, damaging your opponents or making them lose life, and you gaining life, or the same amount of life back. Another really good card in Orzhov colours for that is Debt to the Deathless, which is 2 white and 2 black and X. Each opponent loses 2 times X life, and you gain the life equal to the life lost this way. That can finish a game really fast. It's like double exsanguinate. I don't know if you guys have ever fought against the Debt to the Deathless when it goes off.
Yeah, it's brutal. It's this is kind of nasty. I don't look forward to this. So, question. I mean, I'm sure you have more of these than you've named, but Did yep. you include something like Well of Lost Dreams?
Yes. So drawing cards of life. So Well of Lost Dreams is in there. Alhamrat's Archive, which obviously doesn't give you card draw unless you're double. It gives you double life though. And when you are drawing cards off of spells like Read the Bones, Night's Whispers. So there's all these little cheap black sorceries that say pay two life, scry two, draw two cards, or pay two life, draw two cards. And then I've put in stuff like Erebos and Greed, and I didn't have a spare Necropotence around, so the deck list I'm putting up doesn't have it in, but there will be a Necropotence in this deck. When I brew, listeners, I only brew with cards I have available to me, and then I add into a sort of a fantasy draft for the deck, and then go and purchase the cards I'm missing.
How about Unspeakable Symbol?
I've contemplated that. Is that the pay three life, put a +1/+1 token on something?
Counter, yeah.
Counter, sorry, token. Yeah, get me. I thought about it, and I took it out because I wasn't going super Voltron with it. It's on my list of could go back ins.
Right. Because you're going to have the extra life, and maybe suddenly you need six counters to be able to exile something.
So Johnny Crass and Alex
Zito.
I've added the U in his name because I've spelt it in the British way.
Yeah,
Zito pointed out that I'm running Pestilence Demon in my deck, so that I haven't got the card out in front of me, but he's eight to cast, 5/3 black, 7/6 flying demon. So he's pretty expensive, but he has Pestilence strapped on him, so he can pay 1 black, and it deals 1 damage to all creatures and all players. What happens if you have lifelink out from your Sorin, Solemn Visitor, or your Whip of Erebos, is it gains you a giant bucket of life, plus Karloff, every for 1 black mana, gets, however many players there are, plus how many creatures there are, times 2 encounters.
Yeah, that's, he was using, he cited Thrashing Wumpus, which is just such a fun card that you have to include this, even if you've already made room for, even if you're out of room, Sean, I think you need to put Thrashing Wumpus in, just so you can say Thrashing Wumpus when you cast it.
Thrashing Wumpus. Oh, and a Thrashing Grumpus. I've jammed in a couple of cheaper Extort guys as well. Extort, for those of you that don't know, was a Ravnica mechanic, the Orzhov mechanic from the Return to Ravnica block, which was it's a really subtle effect as well. People don't tend to get too angry about it until it's maybe a bit too late. But it's any card of Extort has, whenever you cast a spell, you may pay a white or a black. If you do, each opponent loses 1 life and you gain that much life. Which means every time you cast a spell, pay an additional 1 on it, and Karloff gains... So he only gets 2 counters on him, because you gain all the life as one instance.
Yep.
But, I mean, who wouldn't like things that say pay an additional 1 when you cast a spell and put 2 +1/+1 counters on your commander? Mm-hmm. The champion Extort card is Pontiff of Blight. What he does, he has Extort, but he gives all of your creatures Extort.
Yeah, so it's glorious.
If you've got a few creatures out and you play any spell whilst you've got the Pontiff out, you can just pay X, where X is the number of cards you've done. Creatures in play that you control, and put that many times 2 counters on Thrashing... Oh, Thrashing Wumpus. Bill, you've got Wumpuses on my brain.
Yay!
The two cards that are in the deck that I contemplated their worth. Now, one of them I think I made up on, but one of them definitely not. Where I wanted to know your opinions on was Shattered Angel and Purity. Now, Shattered Angel I'm actually decided I think is good enough to be in the deck. It was its casting cost that put me off, but it's a 5 mana, 3/2 white for a 3/3 flying angel. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under an opponent's control, I may gain 3 life.
Yeah, that goes in.
Yeah, I thought so too. Now, this one I'm not 100% certain on, because I think it just gets killed by... It does what Vigor does. So it's purity. So it is, in fact, another one of the elemental incarnation cycles from the Lorwyn block. It's 3 and 3 white for a 6/6 flyer. So it's not too bad. A little tricky to cast with the triple white. But if a spell or ability would deal damage to you, prevent that damage, you gain life equal to the damage prevented this way. Now, the Oracle text is whenever a card deals you non-combat damage. You prevent the life damage that way. Now, you gain life equal to damage prevented this way. Are people just going to blast purity?
I don't think so. Depending on the type of deck your opponent is playing, we don't do a lot of non-combat damage to each other except in specialized cases, right?
Well, I do.
Yeah. Oh, Nate's got...
I was actually thinking of Nate as the exception.
But listener Pete does. And I've certainly seen, I think, friend of the show, Nick Jaragoski, go off with some non-combat damage. But if you've got a burn spell in your hand that's going to burn everyone, you might, and you're playing with burn-y kind of stuff, you're going to burn out purity first, aren't you?
Yeah.
I guess if there was a card up on the chopping block, he might be the one. Or it might be the one, rather than
yeah, I guess so. I mean, the impact is going to be fairly... So it's not going to be a fairly beneficial card to you either, because we're not, again, doing a lot of non-combat damage to each other. It's only if you have something like a Pestilence deck or a Ping deck or a dedicated Burn deck, right? I guess just don't...
Maybe I should put Pestilence, the enchantment, into... the deck as well as the Pestilence Demon, but then am I filling up spaces in my deck for a sub theme? It's just pure luck at that point. Or does it count as a sort of second version of do you know what I mean?
Do you have Divinity of Pride in?
Take out your tutors but leave those in.
So my tutors are currently ranking at, I'm just looking at it for you now, 0 tutors in this deck.
Ooh,
I've been doing that on purpose lately, yeah. The closest you get to a tutor is Dark Tutelage, which is not really a tutor, it's card draw. I've got Zuran Orb in the deck, which is a 0 to cast artifact, sacrifice land to gain 2 life. So that comes down to I'm doing the final attack of the game.
Yeah.
And I've got Karloff through, I can sack off my land just to finish the game out.
Yeah, the funny thing is that's... It's a very good surprise.
Yeah.
You don't even have to be close with Karloff. He just has to, Karloff has to have 8. You could swing in with your 8/8 Karloff. Your opponent doesn't block, and then you sack to the Zuran Orb. Of course, everybody's going to see that if it comes, but if you have the Zuran Orb out, but, you know, that's why we have flash enablers.
I am running Divinity of Pride. And I'm also running Blood Baron of Viscopa, sort of my big lifelink creatures. I've got put in Felidar Sovereign, which I've always grumbled about. But every time I mention it, everyone goes, Felidar Sovereign's all right. So I'm going to play with it. And when people realize it's not all right, I'll take it back out again.
it just means that you... The real problem with Felidar Sovereign is one of your opponents has to be holding removal.
Yep.
Or it's over.
Yeah, I know. And then you go, everyone... It's one of the cards where I would... If someone played it... And all 4 players, because we tend to play 4 player listens, all 4 players were sitting there enjoying the game, and it was still, you know, relatively mid game. It's not gone on too long. I played it, and when I win, it's the sort of, someone else played it and said, I win. It's the sort of card that I think the other players would say, good for you. We're going to carry on playing this game.
I've seen it. It tends to degenerate into, not degenerate, but it tends to become an arch enemy match. And then people just hit that other player until just keep them below 40. If you can do that, the tension is good. But
there's an enchantment version of it as well called Test of Endurance, which you need 50 life to win instead of 40. And I didn't bother putting that in the deck either. I've got a few big, just sort of good creatures in the deck, like a Chroma, Angel of Wrath, which could be cut for something more relevant. I put a Sarah Avatar in, because if you're doing life gain, who doesn't want that creature?
I notice you're not running Sarah Ascendant. Is that a deliberate choice?
I only own one, and it's in my Selvala deck. So the replacement Sarah Ascendant is the much crappier but quite similar Transcendent Master.
Mm.
Yeah. I've got Tithe Drinker because it's just a cheap little lifelink creature with Extort on it. The Vampire Nighthawk, which is literally one of the best cards ever printed. Yet. So I think I might cut the Felidar Sovereign. I'm not sure what to put in, though.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't cut it.
Just play with it once.
I would just... No, don't even play with it. Don't restrict yourself in how many times you play it. It just ends the game, and it gets a new game started, right? And yeah, if everybody looks at it and goes, well, you've won. Have fun making tea or whatever you Brits say.
that is what we say.
Then so what, right? But more than likely, it's going to generate a lot of effort to keep you below 40 life. And that's just a lot of fun.
Yeah. So. I'm running all three Sorins.
Yeah, I saw that.
Which is my second deck in a row, which runs every version of a Planeswalker in it. I've got a white-green deck that runs, well... That it can run because there's a white red one, but my white green deck runs every Ajani. I was like, ah, Sorin's so cool. He's like the quintessential white black guy.
It doesn't run Ajani Vengeant.
Yeah, so I said there is a white red one it doesn't run.
Oh, I'm
sorry. It runs every one it can run. Should I cut a Chroma?
I don't know. She's good.
If I had a spare Baneslayer, I'd swap a Chroma for a Baneslayer because it's got lifelink. Yeah. So anyway, and Karloff, just to quickly finish, he's just a big BE, life gainy, black white deck, but he can suddenly go out of nowhere. Boom, you're dead from my commander.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
He's got a few surprises up his sleeve.
As you mentioned, at Johnny Crass and at Alex CK Zito says that they're also running Karloff decks, and so I'm sure the three of you will have a jolly good time talking about this.
Well, I've had a fabulous time, fellas. I do hope you've enjoyed our insights and hope to tune in same time, same channel next week. Enough of my nonsense. Nate?
Yeah. So I picked Azuri Claw of Progress, and I've been waiting for a blue-green commander that can work for heading up an Infect deck.
Mm-hmm.
Because green is good at Infect. Blue isn't as wide with Infect, but it's got some superstars. And blue can do Proliferate, and blue can do Unblockable. So Unblockable Infect creatures. So first, I'll give an update. In a previous episode, I said that Azuri Claw of Progress versus a Karloff of the Ghost Council deck, the Karloff deck would lose. Well, we played a four-player game with friend of the show Nick Jaragowski heading up the Karloff deck, and on the one hand, Karloff did win that game. But on the other hand, the reason Karloff Remarkable. Won that game is because my Azuri could only kill two of my three opponents in a single turn, and Sean and Pete both had more threatening board states at the time.
He's everything he's saying now, 100% true. Yeah. And I, like a spite... What was I playing with, Nate? I've forgotten.
I don't remember. Yeah, I can look at the replay.
As a spiteful move, I just sort of said, right, if I'm going to die, I'm going to do as much disruption to you, Nate, as I can, and then got murdered promptly.
Wait, you were spiteful?
No. No, I wasn't.
Jesus, what was that argument? What was that? You had an issue in your meta where you did something.
Oh, that was a great one. We've spoken about it before, very briefly. Yeah.
Destroying lands. I
had an Arcana of Justice, so when he dies, he exiles a permanent, and a Stuffy Doll out. And another player had a Neverin Yal's disc untapped, and a Kalia player sitting to my right wanted the disc to go off so he could do it. So he decided to return to dust in his turn to exile the disc or force the disc to activate. And he looked over at me. The Stuffy Doll wasn't locked onto him. I said, if you exile the Stuffy Doll, when you kill my Archon of Justice, because the disc was going off, I'm going to exile your only black mana source you have on the table in your Kalia deck. And he'd only pulled one black swamp out at that point. And he said, no, you won't. And I said, just try me. He did it. I did, and he scooped from the game.
Right.
Yeah, apparently that was me being spiteful.
Yeah. Sorry, Nate, we interrupted you.
You should continue. Cut all that out, sorry.
All right. So, of the pre-con, these are the cards that I kept in the deck. And these are almost all of them are staples that we've discussed in previous episodes. Mm. We got Sakura Tribe Elder. We got Eternal Witness. Solemn Simulacrum. Bane of Progress. I like that one.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure we've talked about Coiling Oracle. It's a green and a blue 1/1 Snake Elf Druid. And basically, when it enters the battlefield, you get a free card.
Yeah. I think it got mentioned once a long time ago.
Yeah. Trigon Predator is a 3-mana flyer that every time it does combat damage, you can destroy a target, artifact, or enchantment.
Oh, it's great.
Yep.
Cold Eye Selkie is tempting. I took it out, but it's tempting. Whenever it does combat damage, you can draw a card, and I believe it has some kind of Island Walk.
Yeah, I think it has Island Walk. It's a staple in all the Edric Spymaster decks.
Right. As far as spells go, Kadama's Reach, of course. Arachnogenesis is a new favorite.
Great.
We got the Soul Ring and the Swiftfoot Boots. As far as lands, I'm keeping the Command Tower, of course. I'm adding the Vivid Creek and the Vivid Marsh because I have a lot of proliferate spells in this deck, so that works on any counters on any permanents or players, so I can pump up my Vivids with proliferate spells. Hmm. The Basic Forests and Islands. Orin Reef the Vastwood, we've talked about that one. And there's a Simic version called Novigen Heart of Progress, which is very similar to Orin Reef the Vastwood. Now, as far as the cards that I added, there are, I count 15, blue and or green and or colorless creatures that have infect built in, and they have power less than or equal to 2. So look them all up, throw them all in there. I added a couple of clones that I liked, Phyrexian Metamorph and Gigantoplasm, and there's more options that you can add in for that. Cheap green mana and ramp dorks, like the single mana elves that tap for green, the Quirion elves that can tap for green or blue. I'm counting Yavimaya Elder in there. There are 6 cards that have some kind of proliferate ability, and there are 6 cards that have some kind of unblock ability. One of them, and I'm going to suggest this for Phil's Mazurek deck as well, Champion of Lamholt. Looks pretty innocent. One green. It's a 1/1 human warrior creature. And creatures with power less than Champion of Lamholt's power can't block creatures you control. And whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on Champion of Lamholt. And at the start of combat, Izuri dumps 5 or 6 counters on Champion of Lamholt. And then all of your opponents need to have power 8 creatures or something to be able to block anything you have. Now there's another creature that's on the edge of being cut simply because its power is 3, and it's the highest power creature I have in the deck. Archetype of Imagination, 4 blue-blue, enchantment creature, human wizard, 3/2. Creatures you control have flying. And creatures your opponents control lose flying and can't have or gain flying. So it basically makes all of my infect creatures unblockable to everyone.
Have I ever introduced you to my Asian friend, Sun Quan, Lord of Wu?
Oh, yeah. What's his power? Let's check his power.
He's a 4/4, but if you're running one of these effects, you might as well run 2.
Hmm.
Also, Nate, I know you're a big fan of cards, because I know I am too. Big fan of cards that when you cast them, all your opponents go, "Oh," and he is absolutely one of them.
All right.
Yeah, all he's right. Kind of cheaty.
Well, how is he any different to the Archetype of Imagination? In fact, he's worse than the Archetype.
Because Archetype is, at least it gives your creatures an ability that everybody knows about. Horsemanship is so cheaty. I use it too, don't get me wrong. But it's basically, hey, all your creatures just became unblockable. What are you guys going to do about it?
Phil, that is exactly what Archetype of Imagination does.
Yes, except it has flying and so is vulnerable to things like Hurricane or Plummet and so forth.
Look, not that there are tons of spells in Portal 3 Kingdoms that target horsemanship, and if you're not running them, that's your fault.
That's true. What would you call reach for horsemanship?
I don't know.
Whoa there, buddy.
Yeah, whoa.
Lassos.
Lassos. terrifying to animals. Unnerving.
Unnerving. That's great.
Unnerving. Hey,
so Nate, just since it's Throwback Thursday, are you running a Marsh Viper?
Let me check.
3 and a green creature snake, 1/2 creature snake. And whenever Marsh Viper deals damage to a player, that player gets 2 poison counters.
I don't think so. I think it doesn't work with Azuri's counters. I had the same problem with Virulent Sliver in that they don't have the word infect on them, so all their damage is not automatically converted to poison counters. So if Azuri puts 1/1 counters on them, it doesn't give them more poison.
Right, and so you don't have any infect granters, do you?
No, everything that I need already has infect.
Yeah.
Trust me, I fought against it. It's fine.
Yeah. So for the rest of the deck, there's Simic Good Stuff, and there's lots of options here. Prophet of Krufix has power of 2. Vorl of the Hulklade. He's surprising when he comes out.
Yeah, he's good.
Reclamation Sage is a standard. And then there's Cyclonic Rift, Rite of Replication, Washout. I found one enchantment that's kind of interesting. Bread for the Hunt. 1 green, blue. Whenever a creature you control with a +1/+1 counter on it deals combat damage to a player, you may draw a card.
That's nice.
So
yeah, it's not bad.
It's been kind of underwhelming so far, but I'll try it out more. Some other things to consider. Momir Vig, if you want some creature tutoring. There's Kiora. There's the other Kiora. There's Zamek Guildmage.
There's Kiora, and there's Kiora.
Yeah.
Don't forget Kiora, boys.
So Zamek Guildmage, not Simic, but Zamek with a Z. He's an elf wizard, 2/2, costs a green and a blue, and he's got abilities. Green and a blue, this turn, each creature you control enters the battlefield with an additional +1/+1 counter on it. Next, green and a blue, remove a +1/+1 counter from a creature you control to draw a card.
Very nice. A card you may have not considered, Nate, or at least I haven't seen this, you probably have, you can tell me now, is she's only got 1 power, but not really, Prime Speaker Zagana?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, she's only got 1 power, but she comes in with X +1/+1 counters on OX is the highest power amongst other creatures you control, and you draw that many cards.
Yeah, that's very handy. She won't trigger Azuri's experience counter, though, because she enters the battlefield at least with a power greater than 2.
Yeah, there needs to be a pause between them entering the battlefield and them getting whatever counters. It's why Master Biomancer doesn't work with Azuri's triggers. Like, once a Master Biomancer comes on the field, none of your creatures will trigger Azuri anymore for experience counters.
That's quite funny. Have you thought about... Well, just quickly mentioning Zagana, she's still worth it, I think, just to be able to go... Because your creatures, you're generally making 1 very big, powerful creature... To then just go, I'm going to draw 6, 7, 8 cards and have a big blocker defending left over with it is really, really good. Have you thought about stuff like Simic Manipulator? Like other creatures that use +1/+1 tokens in those colors for your advantage?
No, it's my deck is more straightforward.
You're staying pure.
Pump them up, make them unblockable, and smack them.
Yeah, it was good at that. Thassa, I presume you're running Thassa.
No, I forgot Thassa.
Oh, mate, Thassa should definitely be in that deck. Scry 1's brilliant.
How about Thassa's Bident?
No, I didn't do any Thassa's. Let's see.
Oh, the god should absolutely be in that deck.
I would, yeah, I'd use Thassa, God of the Sea. Let's put that in there.
Yeah, she's still one of my all-time favorite Magic cards. Whenever I build a blue deck, she goes onto my deck. Like, just staples, there you go. She's on there. I think I own like 7 copies of her. I think I might have a problem, guys. I just love merwomen. Don't worry, Thassa. I'll buy you a new Biden. That other merwoman stole yours, but it's okay. Sean loves you. So, I not mentioned it. So, this is the only one of the experience point commanders that we've discussed. Having fought against this deck, the experience points get really out of hand really fast.
Yeah, they do.
And because you can do nothing to get rid of them other than kill Nate or restart the game with Khan liberated. And he Azuri triggers in the pre-combat step, and so in the attack step, not in his upkeep, so Nate gets to cast him and still uses ability on the turn he casts him. It feels like this, ironically, an inexorable tide of death that's just going to keep coming at you over and over again.
Oh, I have inexorable tide in the deck.
Yeah, that's why I mentioned it. But it feels oppressive and in a good sort of, you know, fun way. But it feels like, oh my God, what am I going to do? And it's all got effect as well. And bloop, what can I do about this? And the only answer is to try and kill the player who's built up all the XP points.
Well, it's your own fault for not running Melira Silvok Outcast or the white sorcery leeches from Homelands.
Melira right. Has gone into my Salvala deck, actually.
And leeches, as we all know, is one ghost piece, two sunbursts.
Oh, everyone likes them.
One ghost piece and white for target player loses all poison counters. Leeches deals that much damage to that player. So,
very nice. I mean,
we all run that, don't we?
Oh, yeah, I run six of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and all my white decks. Oh, wait.
You have one white deck that I can think of. Not all including Reaper King.
All your white decks when you're facing yourself.
Cards right. I need to buy. Necropotence, Baneslayer, Angel, and Akroma's Memorial. I just hate money.
Nate, that's a fantastic deck. I look forward to playing it one more time. Only one more, though.
I look forward to playing it again.
Yeah, look, Nate, I look forward to playing your deck in a 3 or 4 player context. That should be pretty fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is good fun. It does feel a bit like Arch Enemy, though.
Well, I'm used to playing that way.
Me too. What's wrong with us, Nate? Why can't we make friends? We should team up like a couple of old bitter men. It's like, they all hate us, but they don't understand. So, listeners, aside from commenting on the deck list, which will be up in the show notes here, which we'll be putting on deck stats rather than tapped out because we prefer deck stats for some reason. It's just cleaner. What of the new 10 commanders have you... How have you expanded them? What... cards. I'm particularly interested in Mizzix, personally. Any of the others you're interested in brewing next, guys?
Like I said before, I'm looking at converting my Caridor Shadowborn Apostles to a Marin of Clan Nel'Toth Shadowborn Apostles.
That's going to be good.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting. I was actually looking forward to building a Daxos deck, but the more I think about it, Daxos goes into a Caridor Enchantress deck.
Yeah, I've been playing with the Daxos deck a bit, Phil, and if I'm totally honest with you, I don't think you'd enjoy it because I think you've already got a better version of the same deck.
Oh, with Karametra?
Yeah, I think you'll just be going, why did I bother putting time into this when I've already done this before in a more successful way?
Well, if not Daxos, then I was actually... I'm kind of torn between either... Who is it? Cassetto, the Orochi guy, the snake guy, or Mizzix.
Yeah, I built a under $50 Mizzix deck, and it's really good.
Very good. Maybe we can make a Calumny deck work. Sorry. Yeah. All right. So next time, maybe we'll do three more commanders. I'm hoping to get a few games in with this one before I abandon it to the mists of time. Right, so unless we have any other comments, gents, we need to say that we love our listeners, don't we? We love our listeners and our viewers. We can't forget the YouTube community. You're fun, you tell us what you think, and you even playtest decks with us. And I'm looking forward to playtesting a lot more decks with a lot more of our listeners. Please take the time to contact us. And if you really like us, this, again, I'm begging. I'm not a proud man. Give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Ha ha ha.
Please, his children need to eat.
Yes, it's for the children.
Well, we're talking five-star ratings quickly. We've got some brilliant five-star ratings on that Podbay review website.
Oh,
Podbay,
yeah, that's right. That's right.
To the person that reviewed our website thinking we were playing Yu-Gi-Oh, I don't know whether you're crazy or a comedy genius, but either way, keep it up.
Yeah, I'm voting for comedy genius. That was hysterical. So good work, whoever did that. I hope you kind of pop onto Twitter and say hi.
Yep.
So anyway, we can point to those five-star ratings, even on Podbay, to the people who care about those things and say, check that out. People really, really dig our show. You should help us by coming on and talking about magic with us. Our theme song was created for the podcast by Nate Burgess, who is also doubling as editor while I'm in Japan. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Nate, for doing that.
Yay.
It's frankly been better the last couple of episodes than I would have managed. And
oh, I didn't want to say.
And believe me, like, my work schedule is crazy. And then because we're in Japan, the team takes up a lot of time outside of work. And you've been really saving the day there. Thank you very much, Nate.
All right.
Yeah. All hey. Right. Let's do a Nate impression. Wait. And also, listeners, we allowed this to pass by, but it was Nate's birthday recently. I won't share the exact date, but happy belated birthday, Nate.
All right.
I'm older.
we can't sing the happy birthday song, so...
We can. It slipped into public domain, but I understand what you mean. We really can't sing that, can we?
No. So I'm just going to say... Well done. You are 1 year closer to your inevitable death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's how we tell our five-year-olds happy birthday in England.
Well, you have to prepare them for a lifetime of misery, which is, you know, living in some place like Leeds or...
That is damn true. And I buy all my cards from Leeds, so I have to go there. Oh, my God.
What's that horrible industrial town in the south? Oh, wait.
There's a few of them. Yep. The Stevenage, which I grew up in, which is like a concrete hull that went off, and then they rebuilt the concrete hull as a specific way of designing gang warfare. Hi, people in Stevenage. Nate, how old are you now? Or is that a closely guarded secret?
I can't tell you.
Nate has been rounding to the nearest century for quite some time. Like, he only measures his lifespan in centuries now. Individual years, too brief for him to actually count. Here comes the nuke.
Yes. Okay, in which case, if the nuke is coming, the Japanese nuke that's going to destroy Phil, who created our logo for the podcast?
Our logo was created for the podcast by Mr. Picto at mrpicto.co.uk with assistance from Kelly DeLuca.
That's good, that's good. Are there any special thanks for anyone, Phil?
Why, yes, special thanks to Tech Wiz's Jesse Thompson and Graham Frank, and to Justin for his server space.
Is there any way you can reach us, Phil?
Is there any way I can reach us?
No, anyway.
Well, if I needed to reach us, Sean.
If you needed to reach us, Phil.
Yeah, if I needed to reach us, Sean, I would just go to our website at commanderandmtg.com or write to us at cast@commanderandmtg.com.
But what if I was just looking for us? Where would I find us?
Ah, Sean, I'm so happy you asked. You could find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, mtgcast.com, iTunes, and Reddit by searching for Commander and MTG Podcast.
That's very intriguing. But let's say I didn't want to talk to all three of us and just wanted to tweet maybe us individually.
Oh, well, individually on Twitter, I'm at Ketchak.
Oh, that's good. I'm at Copain26. Nate?
I'm at Mr. Plorg.
And that, gentlemen, I think...
Oh, there's the nuke. Wow, I should have video recorded it.
And in the event of thermonuclear war, which Phil is currently experiencing, that is our show. Yeah!
Yeah. Oh, man.
When I look into your eyes, Phil DeLuca, I can feel my heart beat. It says, should we play Commander? And that would be so sweet. Could you get 100 cards out, but none of them duplicated? When I think of you playing Commander, I just...